Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nidot Daf Nun Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins from the top line of Daf Nun Zayin. At the end of our previous Shiur, we had learned the Mishnah that introduces this Gemara, and in the Mishnah we had learned that Beis Hatumos Shel Kusim Mitamin Boil, the Beis Hatumos, this was a room or a hut that women would use when they are in a state of Tumah. And here we're talking about the Beis Hatumos of the Kusim. They were a source of Tumas Oihel. The Mishnah says, "Mipnei Shehem Kribim Shom Es Anafilim," because in the event that they experienced a miscarriage, they would bury these stillborn children in the Beis HaTumos. In other words, they wouldn't provide them with a proper burial, but would just dump them over there. So as such, a nefel is mitama, like a mace, and a person would encounter Tumas mace by simply entering these rooms of the Kusim that were the Beis HaTumos. The Gemara here at the top of Nun Zayin asks, what is the basis for the Kusim of not providing them with a proper burial? My Dorush. What do they see in the Psukim that gives license to their behavior of not providing the miscarriages with a burial in a cemetery? The Gemara answers, well, there's a pasuk that says, Lo sasig gvul re'acho asher govlu rishonim benachloscho. This pasuk is in the context of someone who sells the burial plots of his family. So, with that in mind, we explain, Kol sheyeshlo nachlo yeshlo gvul. Anyone who is in the line of inheritance, who is subject to inheriting, has a gvul, has a piece of property, and the property in this case would mean has a right to be buried in a proper grave. Kol she'en lo nachlo, if someone does not inherit, as is the case of a stillborn child, ein lo gvul. So he doesn't have a gvul, he doesn't have property in which he would be buried. He's not expected to be buried in a regular cemetery. Ne'monim loimar kovarnu. The Mishnah spoke about the believability of kusim with regard to different matters. So the Mishnah said they are believed to say, it says, Ne'emonim loma kovarnu shom es hanefilim o lo kovarnu. They are believed to say, regarding a burial, that we buried there a miscarriage, or we did not bury there. And the Mishnah goes on to say their belief regarding a behemoth, to say whether or not it already had a child, and hence a subsequent child would not be its bechor, its firstborn. And it goes on in the Mishnah with other things that they are believed. It should be borne in mind that the Kusim were people that were, their association with Judaism was questionable. We question the validity of their conversion, and as such, they are always a subject of doubt, if you will. They are people that do not accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. They believe in the written Torah, and when it comes to things that are not black on white. With regard to Torah laws, so their believability is questionable. So the the Gemara says they are believed to say regarding a burial that there is or there is not someone buried there in a particular place. The Gemara asks, why should we believe them? but they don't darshan the pasuk of lifnei iver as a pasuk or as an instruction regarding don't mislead somebody. The pasuk reads literally, do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. So that they accept. They won't put a stumbling block in front of someone who lacks sight. However, as far as taking that pasuk to mean don't mislead someone, that they don't do. We, who accept the oral tradition, understand that the pasuk of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol goes beyond its simple translation meaning and includes the prohibition of misleading. But they don't hold from that prohibition. Therefore, it wouldn't bother them to tell us that no one is buried in a particular place when someone really is buried there. So why should we believe them? Omer Rabbi Avohu, B'koyein Oymed Shom. It's talking about a case of a Kusi who is a Kohen, who is standing there. And a Kohen is someone that is prohibited to encounter Tumas Meis, the defilement through the dead. The Gemara asks, well, Vidilma Kohen Tomehu, maybe the reason the Kohen is standing there, this Kohen Kusi is standing there, because he's already Tomei. And therefore, that's the fact that the Kohen Kusi is there is no indication that there is no Tuma there. The Gemara says, Denokit Truma Biodei. Well, it's a case where the Kohen Kusi is holding Truma in his hands, and Truma is something that is forbidden to Metameh. The Gemara asks, well, who says that that's a sign that there is no Tuma? The Dilma Truma Temeahi. Maybe what the Kohen Kusi is holding is Truma that's already been defiled. The Gemara says, Deka'ochil Minei. Well, he's eating from it. And Truma Temeah is something that is forbidden to eat. And they would observe that. So the fact that he's eating it shows us that it's Tohar. Well, Ihochi Mai Lememra. If you have a Kohen that is standing in a particular place and eating truma, so it's obvious that he would be believed. What's the point in telling us that the Kohen Kusi is a sign of no tuma? The Gemara answers, Mahu detema lo biki biyitzira. You might have thought that they are not expert in the matter of fetal development. Yitzira means formation. Let's look at the Rashi, lo biki biyitzira. V'chikavri nefel, when they bury a miscarriage, lo yadi dehu ben arboim yom, they're not aware of it being 40 days into its development, since its conception. V'savri maya v'amahu, they think that something that's 40 days into development is still in the category of mere water, v'eino metame, and as such it wouldn't metame, when in fact it is. After 40 days of development, it is no longer considered mere water. So one might have thought, without our Mishnah and these circumstances, that they are not to be trusted. Komash Malon, that they are to be trusted. So that when they say that on a particular place that there is no Nefel buried here, and you have a Kohen eating Truma, Kohen Kusi eating Truma there, you can rest assured that it is Tome free. Nemonim al habehemo shi bichro. They are believed to say, regarding an animal, let us say that someone buys an animal from a Kusi, and he tells you, listen, this animal is Bichra, it already had a child. Therefore, the subsequent birth that takes place in my possession, will, if it gives birth even to a male animal, I will not have to worry about it being a Bichor. A Bichor is a firstborn male animal with a lot of restrictions attached to it, amongst which the person who has a Bichor born in his Rishus has to give the newborn to a Kohen, who will then offer it as a sacrifice. And in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, one would have to leave it around until it develops a blemish on its own. So the Gemara asks, why is it that we believe the Kusi? V'ha'les lehu v'fnei iver lo siti michshol. Just like we saw before, they don't care about their causing someone else to stumble, to err. Omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, begoizeis v'oyved. They are actually working with the animal. So the fact that they're working with the animal and Gozes is shearing it, these are things that would be prohibited to be done to an animal that's a Bechor. So the fact that they are shearing and working with it, that's a sign that it is not a Bechor. Ihochi Ma'ilam Emra. Well, if that be the case, so then why do I have what's the chiddush? What is there to be told about? What is the Mishnah Bother telling us if these are the circumstances of they're telling us about an animal that it already gave birth, and we see you shearing it and using it. Just to go over this last point, we're explaining the Mishnah then that the Kusi is believed to say about an animal that it has already given birth, and the Gemara set up these circumstances that we see the Kusi working with an offspring of the animal in question. So if that be the case, so it's obvious then that everything is all right. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us that the Kusi is to be believed? So the Gemara says, Mahu Detemo Lo Beki Betinuf. One might have thought that they are not expert in the matter of tinuf. Tinuf is a discharge from an animal that, if it has whatever the necessary characteristics, it could very well have been its first birth. So what we're afraid, what we would have been afraid of, and the Mishnah dispels this for us, that they are not expert in tinuf, and you can have an animal that didn't have a birth type discharge, and they will consider that it is a discharge indicating a birth, and they'll say that the animal already gave birth, when in fact what they saw was not a birth. Komashmlon, the Mishnah tells us that you can rely on them. And when they say an animal already gave birth, they will know what they're talking about. And if there had been a discharge that constituted a birth, they would know that it was such. Nemonim al Hatsiun. Tsiun is the demarcation of a grave. The Rashi says al Hatsiun litzayin v'somchin alehem. They are believed regarding the marking of graves, and we rely on them. The avdino taros hechadolot tzainu, and we will process or expose food that requires tahara to places that they did not mark off, so that when they mark off something, we can rest assured that that is where there is a corpse or there is a mace there, and not in other places. The afalgav the midrabbanan, who, even though the requirement of marking off graves is a rabbinic requirement, and as such, they would ordinarily not be reliable. Kevon d'ksiva, since it is written, since there is a posuk for marking off graves, Mizar Zihiri Bey, they are careful with it. D'chtiv, the posuk in Yecheskel says, V'ro etzem odom, and if you see the bone of a man, Uvona etzlo tziun, and you shall build near it a demarcation. Avolein nemonim al haschochos, and the Mishnah says there are things that are not believed, and that regards schochos, pros, and beis hapras. In our Gemara markings, you can see we have diamonds around these three expressions, and on the side of the Gemara there are no say mivne heading. We have written schochos, pros, and beis hapras. Hesper shloisha dvorim elu shehuzguru b'mishnah. We are going to explain the three things mentioned in the Mishnah, She'ein HaKusim Ne'emonim Aleihem, that the Kusim are not trusted over them. The Gemara, Schochos, Disnan. The Mishnah says, Elu Hein Schochos. The following are Schochos, are coverings. Ilon HaMesach Al Ha'oretz. Let's glance at Rashi across from here. Ilon HaMesach Al Ha'oretz. This is a reference to a tree whose branches overshadow the ground. Vehu samuch lederech beis hakvoros. It's a tree with, it's a very branchy type of tree that's near a cemetery. It's on the road to a cemetery. Vezinnin demisrami bein hashmoshes. Often, or it could happen that Friday night is approaching, that it's getting late on Friday afternoon. Bein hashmoshes, a reference to late Friday. And people have something to bury. And they're not, they see they're not going to make it to a, to the cemetery itself. The Kavri Hossam, they bury the deceased over there, under this tree. The Im Huanofen Muvdolim, Shein Ha'oil Shalem. You could have a tree that, even though we describe it as branchy, but nevertheless, there are gaps between the branches. The Odua Vadai Shiesh Kever Tachas Echod He'o'olos. And it's known that there is a grave under one of the overshadowings, overhangs, which is the branches in this case. The Ein Yodua Eze Hu, but we don't know under which branch. Pakusi Meid Al Echod Ze Tor. And the Kusi says regarding one of the branches, oh, under this branch there is no mace. Eino Naamon. So he is not believed. The Fisheino Chosh Al Hasafek. When it comes to matters of doubt, he doesn't really care. The toile hatuma ba'oil sheni misofik. The kusi's nature is that he'll say that something is tor, making an assumption that the real tuma is somewhere else. So as long as he has an opening, so to speak, onto which to support his claim, he will take it. And therefore, his declaration that there is no tumah here is not to be relied upon. The Gemara goes on, pros, what is meant by that? We said he's not believed regarding pros. The snan, the Tanaic source, avonim pros, hayoitzis min hagoder. A goder is a fence, in this case a stone fence, a fence made of stones, and there are stones that jut out from the fence. It's not preformed smooth stones, but rather some stones are larger than others and they tend to jut out from the fence. This description is going to be very similar to the case of the branches, where there are many branches and there's someone buried under one of them. Likewise here, there are stones protruding from a fence and there is someone buried under one of these protruding stones, but we don't know which one it is. And a kusi comes along and says, under this stone, there is no mace. So he is not believed, as we said before, because the kusi is saying that only because there is a possibility that the mace is under one of the other stones. So based on that opening, that maybe it's under one of the others, so he'll declare this one to be tor when he doesn't really know. The Gemara continues with Beis Hapras. And at this point, the Gemara does not explain the lack of believability of the Kusi, but rather gives us some background information regarding the Beis HaPras, and through this discussion of the Gemara, we will see what the issue is. So the Gemara goes on, Beis HaPras, Omar Rabbi Yehuda. We have a trapezoid form, and under our Nosei Mivneh Henning that you see in the margin, we feature this trapezoid form and have written halachas sheinui shel beis hapras, different halachas that apply to this entity called beis hapras. Beis hapras has to do with a field in which there was a grave, and there are a number of doubts concerning the field based on different circumstances, which we will be introduced to in the Gemara. Be'ezen esibois aminon dekusi eino ne'mon legabi beis hapras u'mosai ne'mon. Under what circumstances do we say that the kusi is not believed, and under what circumstances is he believed regarding this field and the kever that was in it? The Gemara. Omer of Yehuda, Omer of Shmuel, v'napech odam beis hapras v'holech. If you have a field and a grave was known to be in the field, however, the field was plowed up, including the grave. So we know that there is no full body that's intact. It's been dismembered by the blades of the plow that plowed up, that cut through the field. What remains as a problem are fragments of bone, because after the body is plowed up and time goes by, so whatever flesh there was, that has already decomposed, the bone material would remain, and a bone of a corpse, if it's a larger than a barley size fragment, bone fragment, it will not communicate tuma through ohel, but it will communicate tuma through carriage and through touching. Now, if a person wants to cut through a field and there is a doubt concerning the possible contact with bones, so the advice given here is a person menapeach literally is to blow a path aside as you are walking ahead. If you can imagine a person holding a bellows, blowing the soil from in front of him as he is walking across the field, that will in effect scatter any bone material that's in his path, and he can walk through the field. That's this case of menapeh odom beisapras, and beisapras in this context is a reference to a field, as we said, that had a grave in it and it was plowed up. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami mishmei de Rav Yehuda Omar Beis HaPras Shenidash Tohor. This is another halach of a Beis HaPras. As we described, a Beis HaPras that had a body in it and it was plowed up, this halacha tells us that if that field has been trampled through, you can cut right through the field and not have any doubts about having come into contact with bones, because if it's nidash, if it's a field that had been trampled through, any bones that would have been on the path have been crushed already, and there are less than a barley grain in size. And therefore, there is no tuma whatsoever to worry about. The pshat that we are saying is found in the Tosfos, on the lower part of the page, where the Dibur HaMaskil Tosfos says, "Beis HaPras Shenidash Tohor Asoda Shenechesh Bo Kever Koi." This is going on the case of the field that had previously been plowed up, the field that had the grave in it, and after it was plowed up, was then trampled. Then I can come along and cut through and not worry about any tuma whatsoever. Tana. Now another halacha, Hachoresh Beis HaKforos Hare Ze Oisa Beis HaPras. If a cemetery was plowed up, that creates a situation of Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras, Rashi points out, is literally something that is broken. A pras is a piece, something that's been crushed or a piece of. The Ad Kamahu Oise, when the plow cuts through the field and it cuts through a grave, we said before it drags along with it pieces of corpse, of bone material, and the question here is, how far will the plow drag along the bone material? The Gemara answers, Melo mana meo amo beis arboas soin. A melo mano is the length of a plow furrow, which is 100 amos. So you'll have a situation of 100 amos in every direction of the where the cemetery was, and that comes out to Beis Arboas Soin. We said 100 amos really is 100 amos in every, a total of 100 amos in every direction, which is, as Rashi says, 100 by 100. So it would stand to reason that the according to this calculation at least, the plow drags the bone 50 amos in every direction from the grave. According to what Tosfos says, Melo mano meo amo, he quotes the Tosefta that says 100 amos in each direction. So this the exact dimension will have to be left for a further clarification on another occasion, but what from Rashi's description, it's kuf al kuf, it's 100 by 100. So that is what's called four sa'a, base arba soyim, an area of four sa'a. Sa'a is a land measure, and as we said, according to Rashi, it's 100 by 100 amas. Rabbi Yossi Omer Chomesh, he says five sa'ah. The Gemara up till this point was explaining Beis HaPras, and the Mishnah concerning Beis HaPras says that the kusim are not believed. Now, we did not explain clearly what we meant by they are not believed, but I think that in the course of the Gemara, it will become clear through the Gemara's question right now. This question lasts a few lines. It takes in a Tanaic source, and that's indicated by the long question marking the kuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text and the descending vertical dashed line. So the Gemara asks, "Lo mehemni, are kusim not believed regarding the Beis HaPras, Va'atanya?" The following Tanaic source, Sodesh Ovad Bo Kever, a field in which a kever has been lost. In other words, we don't know where in the field is the grave. Namon Kusi Lomar, the Kusi is believed to say Ein Shom Kever, that there is no grave there. The Fisha'eno Meid Elo Al Gufo Shel Kever, when he says what he does, he's testifying about the grave itself. And the issue of a body or an actual grave is a d'oraisa, a Torah-based law. And in other words, that a grave communicates tumah is something we know from the Torah. And with regard to Torah-based issues, the kusim are believed. Ilan shumesa ha'aretz, the tree with the overhanging branches. Namon Lomar ain't tachtov kever. He, the kusi, is believed to say there is no grave under the tree. Lefi she'eno meid elo al gufo shel kever. When he's testifying that there is no grave, he is speaking specifically, directly about the grave itself. And the grave, as we said, is a Torah-based source of tumah. And on Torah-related matters, the kusi is believed. So our question is, here in this source we say that a field where there is a doubt concerning the presence of a grave, and that happens to be one of the examples of a Beis HaPras, which is, in this case, a Sodesh Sheneva Bo Kever. We see that the kusi is believed. We should point out, by the way, that Rashi says on the second line under the Gemara commentary, quoting the Gemara in Moichot, in Gimel Beis HaPras Hein, Rashi reports, She'ovad bo kever, Sodeh she'ovad bo kever, a field in which a grave has been lost, in other words, its location is not clear, the she'nechrash bo kever, the plowed up field, and stay boichin. That's a third category which we won't get into right now. But what do we see here? We see that in the case of a Beis HaPras, in the case of the lost grave, the kusi is believed. In our Mishnah we said that regarding a Beis HaPras, a kusi is not believed. So the Gemara answers, Omer of Yochanan, B'mahalech ubo al penei kula. The case in which the kusi is believed is where he is transversing the entire field, length and width. And if that be the case, it might be, it would seem that we're talking about, like we said before, a kusi that's a kohen who otherwise is warned against encountering tumas meis. So he is walking the length and breadth of the field, and therefore he will be believed. The Gemara asks, like we asked earlier, Ihochi Maila Memra, if that's the case, then why do I need to be told that? So Mahu Detema Ritsua Nafka, one might have thought, without being told that he's believed, is that a part of this field has a strip of land that extends from the field. And when he says there is no body in this field, he is really assuming that the body, if there is one, it's on the strip that it protrudes from the field. And as we said before, where there is an element of doubt, he will declare something to be tohor based on his reliance upon that possibility. Let's look at this explanation in the Rashi. Ritsua nafka min hasodeh, the nikres al shem sodeh, do a strip of land extends from this field and it's associated with this field. Visham hu toila es mokam atuma, and in his mind he says that if there is a body, it's over there. V'hocha Ovar Misveka, and here he transverses the rest of the field with this comfort level in mind, that the body is over there under that, under the strip of land. The Lisveka Lochash, when it comes to an element of doubt, so he won't worry. He will enter something that's of a doubtful nature and not be worried about that. So the Gemara answers, Komash Malon, and Rashi says, Kevon de Alkol, Dalid Ruchoy Selvar, since we saw this Kusi transverse all four sides of the field, so Luritsua Lochashinon, I'm no longer going to worry about the possible strip of land extension from this field. The Gemara goes on, Zeh HaKlal. The Mishnah had mentioned a rule, a general rule, and that is anything that Dover Shechashudin Bo, something they are suspect over, Ein Nemonim Alav, so they are not to be trusted over it. So something that they are suspect of not fulfilling, they cannot testify regarding such a matter. The Gemara asks, Zeh HaKlal Asurim. Oftentimes in the Mishnah, when you see an expression of this is a rule, Zeh HaKlal, what is being included by the halacha being stated in a rule fashion? So the Gemara answers, Lasuy Tchumin V'Yayin Nesech. These are two areas that they are themselves not careful about. Tchum is the Shabbos related prohibition of going beyond a settled community 2,000 amos, so that a kusi is not believed to say regarding a particular point that this is still within the tchum of the community, within the boundaries of the community. And Rashi explains that being that tchumin ardurabonin, this prohibition of not walking beyond 2,000 amos of a settled area is a rabbinic prohibition, they are themselves not observant of it, they're not careful about those kind of things, so they cannot testify regarding those matters. And the second point is V'yayin Nesech has to do with the prohibition of allowing wine to be exposed to an idol worshiper. In other words, if one has wine and an idol worshiper came and stirred the wine or handled the wine, touched the wine, that will render the wine unfit for Jewish consumption. We'll call it becomes at that point unkosher wine. So they are not believed to say that this wine has remained idol worshiper free, being that they themselves are not makbid on their own wine from being in contact with idol worshippers. So that concludes the seventh perek of Maseches Nida. We now continue at the top of Omid Beis, the eighth perek, Haroya Kesem. The Mishnah. Haroya Kesem al Besorah, a woman who notices on her flesh a blood stain. So it all depends on where she finds it, whether or not she will be considered a Nida, or she will be able to explain away the presence of the blood on her body from some type of outside non-nida source. So a woman who sees blood on her flesh, keneged beis haturfa tmeah. Beis haturfa is the female gender area. So if it's on her body below that point, so it will be a sign that it came from her own body. And being that it's in that location, it's assumed to be nida, menstrual related blood, and she'll be tamea. V'shelo keneged beis haturfa, if it's not opposite that area, tahora, so she is tahora. The blood is not assumed to have come from that area. Al akeva v'al roish gudla tamea. If she finds blood on her heel or on her foot. Thumb, tamea. Al shoka, the al parsuseha, on the shok, the lower part of her leg, that's from, let's say, from her knee down to the ankle, and parsuseha, her feet, mibifnim tamea, if it's from the inside of that part of the leg, so she'll be tamea, and mibachutz, if it's on her leg, but on the outside of her leg, she will be tahora. the al hatzdodim mikan umikan tahorah, and on the sides from behind or forward, it is tahorah. Rasa al chaluka, if she notices blood on her chaluk, chaluk is a garment. Mina chagor lumato tameo, from the belt downwards tameo. Mina chagor lumalo tahora, that would be from the belt upwards, that would be a sign that she's still tahora. Rasa al base yad shel chaluk, if she notices blood on her garment's sleeve. Im magia keneged beisa turfo tameo, if that part of the garment reaches an area that is opposite the female gender area, so that's a sign that it could very well have come from that area and landed on the sleeve, and she'd be tameo. Vim lav Torah, if that part of her sleeve doesn't reach the area keneged beisa turfo, so it's not assumed to have come from there. Hoysa poishtosoi umiskaseboi balaila, if a woman was taking off and covering herself with this garment at night, kol mokim shenimtza boi kesem tamea, wherever a stain is found on the garment, after all she was taking it off and covering herself with the garment, so it might have she may have been bleeding of the tomei blood and landed on the garment, any part of it, meishu choser, because it is in movement all the time. Choser literally means it returns, but sometimes the top of the garment ends up in her turning around at night under the bottom part of her body. V'chein befulius. Fulius is another type of garment. Rashi says, ma'afores shemiskase bo. Ma'afores might be taken to mean a type of scarf or shawl that she covers herself with. So the same halachas would apply to this article of clothing. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading and structural note in the margin, the Nosei Mivneh heading, and we indicate that this goes till Nun Ches Omid Aleph. We will be featuring Roman numerals 1 and 2. These are two Shnei Ta'omim Bedino Shel Shmuel. The Gemara will be sharing with us two explanations for Shmuel's ruling, which says Bodka Karka Oyu Mumotzo Dam Tahora, if a woman was about to sit down on the ground and she looked at the spot that she was going to sit down and noticed that it was Tahor, that it was there was no blood and was a clean spot of ground, and she sat down there, then got up and found blood. So after checking the Karka Olam, she got up and found blood there. She is still Tahora. And the question is, why is that? After all, where else did the blood come from? She just sat there, got up, notices now there's blood. So in our markings, you'll notice a Roman numeral number 1 opposite the line which says Ad Shetargish Bivsara, and on Nun Ches Omid Aleph, you'll find a Roman numeral number 2 opposite the top line over there, where there'll be a second approach to explaining Shmuel's ruling. In our introductory notes, we have indicated with a Roman numeral number 1, Ein ho'isha nitmeis elo im kein hirgisha bivsara. A woman does not become anida unless she feels a blood flow coming forth from her. And in the case of the woman that sat down on a checked out piece of land, got up, noticed blood there, and she didn't feel the blood flow coming from her body, so she remains tahora. Roman number 2, which is an indication of that which we've marked on Chav Ches Omen Aleph at the top, Kol Davar She'enoi Mekabel Tumo Kigon Karka Eino Mekabel Ksomim. A surface that doesn't absorb tuma, like the ground, a piece of ground is itself not considered to become ever tome. So it also does not become the basis or the platform for ksumah, for blood stains. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Shmuel, Botko Karka Olam, a woman checked out a spot on the ground, noticed it to be clean, the Yoshva Oleha, she sat there, Umotso Dam Oleha, when she got up, she noticed blood there, Tohora, the woman is still Tohora, Shenemar, Bivisora. Now, here we're placing our Roman numeral number 1, indicating the first approach to explaining Shmuel's ruling that she is Tahora. We should have pointed out also with our markings that we mark Shmuel with a firebox, indicating that this is something that will, this particular approach or din of Shmuel will preoccupy us till we get till Amud Beis. Hence, it's something to focus on for quite a while. So his ruling that she is Tahora is now explained based on this pasuk of Bivsara, which is in the context of a woman becoming a Nida, and it speaks in the pasuk about the flow of the blood Bivsara. And we darshan this to mean, we explain this to mean, Ashitargish Bivsara, until she feels a blood flow coming from her, and that did not take place in this case where she sat on the spot of ground. The Gemara asks, Hi, Bivsara. Now you'll notice we have a double underline. This marking is explained in the margin under the Mivneh heading, Miboyale in quotation marks, because this is the term that's emphasized. Kushios, these are questions. Bivsara shehuva kemokor laha deliel, the word Bivsara which was used as a source for that which we said, Miboyale lemashu acher, I need it for something else. So the Gemara asks, well, don't I need it for miboyalei shemitame bifnim kibachutz, to reveal to us a special halacha that the woman's blood, the nida blood, is metamaher even before it exited her body, literally exited her body. The blood at this point would under other circumstances have been called a base hastorim, a covered, a concealed area, and generally speaking, there is no tumah beveis hastora. But in the case of nida, the Torah reveals that there is tumah, even though it's at that point of her body. So I need bevesora to tell me that chiddush. The Gemara says, "You're right." However, im kein lemakro bevesar, the pasuk could have read ba bosar if that's all it was telling me. My bevesara, the extra hay in this pasuk, shma mino ad shetargish bivisora. So we have the basic babosar plus the hay entitles me to conclude both of these halachas. The Gemara asks, v'akati miboyale bivisora velo b'shvir velo b'chaticha. Do I not still need the word bivisora to tell me that a woman who, let us say, discharges a shvir? A shvir is it's a very early stage of a fetal development. It's like the skin of a fetus as it's developing, and within the shvir or the chaticha, some type of hunk of tissue matter, and inside of it there is blood. So we say that this will not make her into a nida. The only blood that's contained in the woman herself, not contained within something else. So we learn Bivasara to teach me Velo Bishvir Velo Bachaticha. So the Gemara answers and says, you know, you're right, I really need Bivasara for that. However, I am not coming to the exclusion of the previous teachings. Tarti Shmamina. There is a great deal of discussion in the Meforshim on this particular expression, but one of the approaches is that it's what's called in the Lashon of the Gemara shkulin, equal or balanced. In other words, there isn't any more reason for me to derive this din of b'shvir v'lo b'chaticha, v'lo b'shvir v'lo b'chaticha, any more than to derive mitame b'fnim kebachutz. So since they are shkulin, so tarti shmamina, both of those I derive from the added hay, and in addition to that, I have the basic drush of ad shetargish bivisara, and Therefore, all three can be concluded from this. For more information on this particular topic, we've presented it in a very superficial fashion, but we recommend that you look at the Chidushei HaRashba, and we made a note of this on the in the margin of our Gemara, where to find more information. But as far as Pshat, we'll call it Pshat HaPoshet, the Poshet of Pshat, this Tarti Shmamino, we can say is 2 points are learned in addition to the original drosha of Achi Targish Bivsora. So we keep our original drosha of Achi Targish Bivsora, and in addition to that, we have two more points. One is Mitam Bifnim Kebachutz, and the second additional point is Bivsor Vlo Bishvir Vlo Bachaticha. Hence, a total of 3 points are in fact derived from Vivisora. At this point, we have a new geometric form in the context of our sugya. The triangle appears, and you'll see as you scan down the page a number of triangles. These are explained in the margin as kushios al ha de Omar Shmuel. These are questions regarding that which Shmuel said. The Omar ein ho isha nitme sela im kein hirgisha. He said that a woman doesn't become tome unless she felt it. We are referring to the feeling of a blood flow. Now, the nature of these questions we see from sources. As you skim down the page, you notice the triangles are followed by Tanaic sources. In each case, we seem to see a case of a woman becoming Tamea, even though she doesn't have a feeling of a blood flow emerging, emanating from her body. Toshma, Oisha Shehi Oisa Tzrochel, a woman who was relieving herself of her body needs, she was urinating, the Ruah saw dam, and she noticed blood. Rabbi Meir Omer, im oimedes tamea, if she was urinating in a standing position, which is unusual for women, she will become tamea. The im yosheves Torah, if she was in her natural urination position, seated, she and noticed blood, that will be she will be tahora. The Rashi points out oimedes tamea the aidi de dochik lo alma by being in a standing position, so it causes pressure on the internal organs with regard to this particular matter. So since the dochik le alma de meumad hishtina, she was urinating while standing velo yochlo laatzor, and she couldn't contain herself. Hodur me raglayim lamokur. There's a type of backup of urine into the uterus area. The icy dam, and the urine then brings with it blood that actually has its source is the mokur, the menstrual area. If she's yosheves, she's seated, and blood comes, we will then say that the blood that she sees has nothing to do with the reproductive area, but the mako yeshlo rashi, the mako yeshlo b'mokim mei raglayim, and she must have some type of bladder injury. She'ein derech dam nidol lotzeis im mei raglayim. It's very unusual that in normal urination there is menstrual blood that emerges. So the Gemara goes on. After having said this, made this distinction between a standing posture versus a seated one, hechi domi, what are the circumstances regarding feeling? E da'argisha, if she felt a blood flow, then yosheva samai tahora, why when she seated would she remain tahora? If she felt a blood flow and so what, she was seated, she should be a tamea. Elolav de lo argisha. Rather, the circumstances of this source is that she did not feel the kotoni omedes tamea. It says in this source that if she, while standing, she will be tamea. The Gemara, and so that's a kasha on Shmuel. The Gemara explains, no question. Lo oilum de argisha. She actually did have a blood flow feeling. However, she thought it was something else. The aim were, she thought hargoshes meraglayim havoi, that it was, she felt that it was her urine that was coming forth. Therefore, we say oimedes, when she is standing, hodur meraglayim lamokav aisi dam, the meraglayim will back up to the reproductive area and bring forth with it blood. V'yosheves tahora, when she is urinating, seeding, so what she was feeling was then pure, a pure urinary feeling, and nothing to do with a blood release. But once again, the when she was standing and the blood comes forth, she thought it was a urinal feeling, when in fact it was a feeling of a blood flow. So the tuma that we declare over here is a result of a blood flow with a feel. Toshma, another attempt to question. Aid shoyenosun tachasakar, the aid is the white checking cloth that she uses for checking herself to establish whether or not she has any blood flow, and she has had such a cloth under her pillow, v'nimse salov dam, and found on it some blood. Im ogoil, if the blood stain is round, tahor. Im vimoshuch, if it's striped, it's a stripe of blood, then tome. Hechidomi, what are the circumstances? I da'ar gisha, if she had a blood feeling, then ogul amaitor. Why, if it's circular, is she tahora? Elo lav de lo argisha. The circumstances here must be that she didn't have a hargosha. Vikotoni moshuch tomei. And it says here that if it's striped, so the woman will be considered tamea. So what do we see? We see non-feeling, and still there is tuma. That's a kasha on the explanation number one that we gave for Shmuel. Loi, the Gemara rejects this and says the Oilam Dargisha, the woman had a feeling. The Amor Hargoshus Aid Havoi. And but she thought that what she was feeling was the checking cloth and its rubbing on her inside body walls. Therefore, Moshuch Vadai Migufa Asa, if it's a stripe of blood, that's definitely from her body. The nature of the manipulation of the checking cloth on her internal area causes the blood to appear as a stripe. However, ogoil tahor, it's not natural for a for blood that comes comes as a result of her checking to be in a circular form. So, in that case, then it really is not a feeling of blood flow, but rather it's simply she was feeling the checking cloth, and how the blood is there is not a result of a menstrual flow. Toshma, nimso al shaloi, if the man, the couple who had intimacy, find if the man has on his checking cloth, so tamein v'chayoven v'korban, both the man and the woman are considered to be tamei, and since we're talking about a couple that experienced intimacy, so he is tome as a boyal nida, as having had relations, intimacy with a woman who we discovered to have been a nida, and she also is in violation, and they have to bring a sacrifice. Nimtso al shalom, if she finds on her checking cloth, asyum is a word, probably a Greek word, meaning immediately following the intimacy, tamein. Both are tame because the blood flow that she sees immediately after intimacy was there at the time of the intimacy. So they're both tame v'chayovin v'korban. The tuma that we're speaking about here is the tumas nida, and he is tame of having, as a result of having had relations with a nida. Nimtso al shelo le'achar zman, if she finds on her checking cloth as a result of a checking that she did not do immediately, then Tamein misafek, will say that the couple are tamei, but out of doubt. Specifically, the man is not, it's not for sure that the blood flow started at the time of the intimacy. It may have started afterwards. Upturin mina korban, because we're not sure if there was an actual case of intimacy with a nida, so there's no bringing of a sacrifice. Hechidomi. Once again, what are the circumstances? Ida argisha, if she felt a blood flow, so la'achar zman amai pturin, if she had experienced at the time of intimacy a blood flow with a feeling, so why are they poter? Amai pturin min a korban? Why are they exempt from bringing a sacrifice? Elalav de lo argisha. We're speaking about a woman that had no feeling of blood flow. V'katoni nimsa al shelo asyum. And it says that in the event that that she finds on her checking cloth immediately after the intimacy, tamein v'chayoven v'karbon. So they are both tamei, including the woman. She is tamea as a nida. So what do we see here? We see the woman being declared tamea even though there was no feeling of blood flow. The Gemara says, lo, le'olam da'argisha. The woman did have a feeling. However, v'eimo hargoshas shamosh havi. She thought it was the male organ as it entered her that she was experiencing, that the feeling of that happening, when in fact it was the blood flow. So it was a blood flow with a hargosha, and that's why the source says, describes her as tmeya. Toshma nimseis atoimer gimel sveikis beisha. There are three areas of doubt regarding the woman. Al basara, safek tomei, safek tohor. If she finds blood on her flesh, maybe it came from her, maybe not. So, tomei, if we declare her tomei. Al chaluka, she finds it on her garment, safek tomei, safek tohor. Tohor, when in doubt, we will declare her to be tohora. Uve magois, uve hesetois, haloch achar horoiv. To appreciate this expression, let's glance at the Rashi about Magois v'hesetus l'chacharoiv, isha shelo motza kesem, a woman who did not find a stain, v'hare hi machzekes atzma b'sofek nida, and yet she considers herself a possible nida, kagon she'ein lo veses, a woman that does not have a regular time for seeing blood, u'regila liros tovir, and she sees on a very constant, very ongoing basis, the Nogo Hisita, and this woman who is not sure of when she has her vessels, her blood flow, and she touched things or moved things, Haloch Achar Roiv Yomeha, we follow the majority of her days. In Roiv Yomeha Regil Lirosif, Roiv of the majority of her days, she's accustomed to having a blood flow. Magov Seita Tomei V'afagav V'hashtelo Argisha, things, food items, or other things that need to be tahor that she touched or moved will be declared tamei, even though she didn't have a feeling right now of a blood flow. So the Gemara now focuses on this on the closing part of this Tanaic source and says, "My halocha haroiv, what is meant by follow the majority? Lav, does it not mean im roiv yomea tamein tamea? If the majority of her days are with the blood flow happening, so whatever she touches or moves is going to be considered tamei. V'af agav de lo argisha, even though there was no feeling. The Gemara says loi. That's not the explanation, but rather im roiv yomea b'har gosha chazio. If the woman experiences with a blood flow feeling, the majority of her days are with blood flows with a hargosha, then tamei. The emor argosha, we would say that she probably did have a feeling, velav adaita, but she didn't pay attention. So even though you'll have a situation of a woman discovering a blood flow and possibly saying, I didn't feel it, but since the majority of her days she has blood flows with feelings, we will declare the things she touched to be tamea. You notice we have a bracketed section, and the closing of the brackets is three lines from the bottom. We also have a bracket length indicator, this vertical dash dotted line that you see to the side of the Gemara text. The note that accompanies this bracketed section reads as follows: Achrei ha-sugrayim, ha-Gemara chozeres la-hakshes kushis ha-Shmuel. After the brackets, the Gemara resumes its questions against Shmuel. B'soicham, within these brackets, ha-Gemara miva'eres is ha-mokor ha-achroin she-huzker b'Gemara, the number 4. Triangle number 4 presented a Tanaic source, and the Gemara within the bracketed section will proceed to analyze it further. You'll notice, as we said, three lines from the bottom, a triangle appears, which will again be a citation from the source and raised as a kasha on Shmuel. You might notice that we've dashed underlined the expression, the lo hirgisha, and there's a sixth triangle, second line from the bottom, followed by also a dash in the line below here. Gisha, further indications of tuma, even though there was no feeling, no feeling of blood flow. But in the meantime, we, or that having been said, now that the structure is clear, we go back to the bracketed section. So we see in the brackets, Omar Mor, a quote from that which we saw before, Al Bisora, if the woman discovers on her flesh, Sofek Tomei Sofek Tohor, a doubt whether it's from the Nida source or otherwise, Tomei, we declare the woman to be Temea. Al Chaluka, Sofek Tomei Sofek Tohor, Tohor. However, if it's on her garment and we're in doubt, so she remains tahora. Hechidami, what are the circumstances? Now, you'll notice we have diamonds here, and on the mivne heading in the margin we've written, shlave biwur, these are stages in clarification, hechidami b'motzo al besora and al chaluka, what are the circumstances? So, I mechagor ulamata, from on her body, from below the belt area. So, if the case of the source is that blood was found mechagor ulamata from the belt area and below, so al chaluka mai tor, why in the case of it being found on her garment and it's on her garment from below the belt area, why should she be tahora? V'ha tanan, did we not learn in the Mishnah min hachagor ulamata tome? Notice we have a little arrow to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. If you align this with the arrow that you find on the upper part of the page that's in the Mishnah, it mentioned there that if she's rasa chaluka, min hachagor lamata tamea. So why would this source say tahora? The e mechagor lamalo, if it's from the belt area and above, then al besora, in the case of besora, the aleph case of this source, amai tamei. Why should she be declared tamea when it's so high up on her body? How could it have come from that menstrual area? V'hotnan, have we not learned ruas odam al besora shelo keneged beis hatur fa tahora? This statement was found in our Mishnah where it spoke about finding a stain on her body shelo keneged Beis HaTorfa, she would remain Tahora. And if it's from the Chagur Lamala, that's not Keneged the Beis HaTorfa, that's not opposite the menstrual area, if it's on the upper part of her body. And yet, the source said that if it's found Mechagur, if it's found on her body, she would be declared Temea. So if the circumstances are Mechago ulamala, why when it's found on her flesh why would the source say that al besor sofik tomei sofik tor she's tmea? So the Gemara answers, I boyesemo mechago ulamata, the boyesemo mechago ulamala, the source can be explained, if you like, found on the lower part of her body, and there's another approach on the upper part of her body. I boyesemo mechago ulamata, we can explain the source that we broke down to Aleph and Beis in it's appearing from below. Kagon she'ovra b'shuk shel tabochim. If you want to know why this woman, if it's from Chaga Ulamata, we asked, well, if it's on her garment, why should she be declared tahora? Why in the Omar Mar source did we say that if it's on her chaluk, she would be tahora if it's mechagor ulamato, the lower part of her garment, the lower part of her body, but on the garment? Well, kagon shover b'shuk shel tabochim. This woman had walked through a butcher's market area where animal meat is being butchered. Al besora, if she finds it mechagor ulamato on her personal body flesh, so al besora migufa asya. Asoi, it came from her body. It's menstrual blood. The ime alma asoi, had it come from outside, not from her body, al chaluka miboyale ishtakuchi, then she should have found a stain on her garment. And she didn't. She found the stain on her flesh. al chalukah, if it was the blood stain is on her garment, and we're talking about the woman that traveled through the butcher's market, me alma osa, it came from outside. It didn't come from her body. Di'imi gufa osa, had it come from her body, al besora mibaya le ishtakuchi, it should have been found on her flesh, and it didn't. It was only on her garment. V'iboya seima, another approach to explaining the source, the source that was featured at the beginning of the bracketed section. Another way is by saying mechago lemalo, that it really was from the mid section above. Kagon de izdakra. This is a body jerking motion where a person, in this case the woman, threw her head backwards. Rashi says zokfa atzmo la'achoreah. It's a type of a posturing where she throws herself backwards. The afagav de'ovra b'shuk shel tabochim. Rashi says even though she may have cut through a butcher area, tameah, she will be considered tameah di'me al ma'asoi if it came from the butcher area, al chalukei boi le'yishtakuchei. It should have come, it should have been found, a stain should have been found on her garment. So let's now read this in the Gemara. As we say, this is the second approach to explaining the Omar Mar source. Me chagor lemalo, it was found on her upper section. Kigon de Izdakra, where she had made this body jerking motion. Al Bisara, if it's found on her flesh. Vadai migufo asoy, it came from her body. It came from her menstrual area. And if you want to know how it got to the upper part of her body, it's because she did this jerking motion. The E me'alma asoy, had the blood come from the butcher market, then al chaluka boy le ishtakuchi, it should have been found, a stain should have been found on her garment. But it wasn't. It was only found on her body. Al chaluka, if she has on the upper part of her garment a blood stain, me almo asoy, then it came from the butcher area. The I migufa asoy, had it come from her body, al besora iboy le ishtakuchi, there should have been some type of blood mark on her flesh. And it wasn't. It was only on the garment. Kotoni mihas. After all is said and done, it says in this source, al besora, a blood stain found on her body, sofek tome sofek tor. We don't know if it came from that menstrual area. Tome, we declare her to be tamea. Ve'afagav de lo hirgisha, even though there was no feeling of a blood flow. That represents a problem for Shmuel, for the explanation of Roman numeral number one above for Shmuel. The Otan, and furthermore, we have a source that says Horoya Kesem al Bisra, Kenege Beis HaTur Fatmea. This we saw in our Mishnah, and it said if she notices a blood stain on her flesh, opposite the area of her female gender organs, so she is Tamea, the Afagav de Lo Higisha. Even if she didn't have a feeling, the Mishnah seemed to indicate the mere discovery of the blood stain on her flesh is enough to make her tamei, even without a feeling. Omer of Yirmiya Midifti, Moide Shmuel, Shehi Tamea. We continue at the top of Nun Ches Omer Aleph, Midarabonon, that she is tamei. Shmuel will concede she is tamei on a rabbinic level. Rashi says, Midrabonon, Dilma Argashova Lav Adaite. The reason the Rabbonon imposed this is that maybe she had a feeling, but she just wasn't aware of it. As you can see, at the top of Nun Ches Amud Aleph, there is a Roman numeral number 2 in the space to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, a second explanation for Shmuel that we had originally featured in the firebox. Rav Ashi Omar, Shmuel, who the Omar Krabi Nechemi Shmuel, who spoke about the woman who checked the spot of ground, sat down, got up, noticed a blood stain, and we declared her to be Tahora. Shmuel's din is in conformity to Rabbi the Tana Rabbi Nechemya. This not Rabbi Nechemya Oimer, Kol Dover Shena Makabel Tuma, Eino Makabel Ksomim. A surface that does not absorb Tuma, that resists Tuma, so it does not it doesn't serve as a platform for tomei blood stains. So Bishlamar Rav Ashi, Hainu Tugamar Karka, with Rav Ashi's explanation that Shmuel is based on Rabbi Nechemya, we understand why Shmuel featured a case of her having checked out a piece of karka. Karka, ground, is not something that becomes tomei. Rav Yirmiyah Midifti that was found. You'll notice we have a star to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. This star is appropriate for the star at the bottom of Amud Aleph, where Rav Yirmiyah Midifti explained that Shmuel, even when there's no feeling, is moida that there's tuma. So Shmuel's halacha is simply based on whether there was a hargosha or not. So according to Rav Yirmiyah's approach, my iria karka, Shmuel, who says that there was tara because of no hargosha, so why does Shmuel's case feature her checking a piece of ground out? Afilu glima nami, even if the woman had found a stain on a garment, but her experience was without feeling. So Shmuel would be able to say that midoraisa she is tahora, and midorabonan there is a chashash. And we'll declare it tmeya midorabonan. So the Rashi on the first of the narrow lines says Elo Rav Yirmiyah Midifti, the kibla l'tiyufta d'liel, that accepted the repudiation from that had been we had seen in the triangles number 5 and 6 at the bottom of Nun Zayimud Beis. And Vishani, and he then answered Moida Shmuel that Shmuel would concede that there's Tumah Rabbanan, Umidikivu Lutyufta Michlal the Taima de Shmuel Mishum Hargosha. From the fact that he accepted the repudiation and then it responded, it shows us that the Tam of Shmuel, according to Yirmiyah Midifti, is because of Hargosha. The E Mishum Hargosha, if her Tahara is based on feeling or the lack thereof, my Yiria Karka, why does Shmuel himself talk about checking a spot on the ground? Afilu glimonami bodka, even with regard to a garment, she batalis, that she checked out a piece of fabric, a garment, viyoshvela, and sat on the talis, v'acharkach motze dam, and then found afterwards blood, tahora, shelo hirgisha, she should be tahora, because she didn't have a feeling. So the question once again is, according to Rav Yirmiyah Midifti's understanding of Shmuel, why does Shmuel speak about checking a spot on the ground? He could have spoken about a case of checking a garment, sitting on it, getting up, noticing a stain, and Shmuel likewise could have said if there was no hargosha, she would be tahora. So why the focus on the karka? The Gemara answers, lo mibaya ka'omar. The structure or the sense here is in the lo mibaya fashion, as follows. Lo mibaya glima. I don't have to tell you about the case of a glima, the lo mivdak shapir, which is something that's hard to check thoroughly. The equal meimar me'alma osa, and there's room to say that the blood that she discovers after she gets up from it really came from some outside source. In lafilu karka, the mivdak shapir, but even a spot on the ground that's easily checked, you can see when before you sit down, it's clear there's no blood there. The equal lemeima migufa asya, and then when she gets up, well, where else did the blood come from? It must have come from her, and yet we say that if it was without hargosha tahor, still she will be considered tahora. So Shmuel chose a case where there, in fact, is an additional chiddush level. There's an additional element of novelty in Shmuel's revelation, where even something that like a piece of ground, where it's very hard to explain the presence of the blood other than from her body, still, since it comes without a hargosha, she will be tahora. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.